The Up and Under podcast is proud to be a part of Off the Ball Network. For all things basketball, football, soccer, golf, baseball, sports betting, you name it, go to offtheballnetwork.com and check out the amazing articles posted by writers of the network, including yours truly, and the other podcasts on basically every sport under the sun. Off the Ball Network, your home for quality sports and entertainment content. SeatGeek is the newest sponsor of Off the Ball Network. If you're listening to this podcast, there's a 99.9% chance you love sports. But watching these games in person is super expensive. To help ease the pain in your wallet, use the promo code OffTheBallNetwork to get a $20 discount for first-time users of SeatGeek. Your next best night ever is waiting, and SeatGeek has the tickets.
I'm ready when y'all are, I guess.
All right, ready?
Yep.
All right, 3, 2, whatever. Beach boys on a ride. What is good, everybody? It's your boy Francis Carlotta on episode 53 of the Up and Under podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, all three of us are back. The core three, Grant Hechinger, Connor Byrne, and myself, we're back. And it is what a day. What a day. Let's all take a breath. Let's all have it sink in. It feels incredible. Connor, Grant, how are y'all? I'll start with Connor because you made a big move recently to a whole different state. You used to live in Florida. Now you don't. So talk to the people. Where are you at? How are you, bro?
Wait, that can't be the last time I've been updated on this show.
But it has. No question.
Yeah. I guess just to be the core three, I don't think anyone who listens to this show in the last year probably even knows who I am. But yeah, I said I've been in Florida, but then I went to school. I'm in school now. So I'm in a 2-year program in North Carolina. And then this summer, I'm in Minneapolis, Minnesota. So I didn't need to include the Minnesota part. I'm there for the summer just doing an internship, and then I'll be back in North Carolina after that. But I'm excited because the Wizards are finally in the news on a national stage. As I was just saying before we started recording, probably for the first time since Gilbert Arenas had guns in the locker room. So,
oh boy.
Yeah, exciting times. Oh, also, that was a trivia question for you guys. That you don't have to answer right now, but you can mull it over throughout the episode. And if you feel like you got it, just, you know, shout it out. Otherwise, the listeners can try on their own at home, which is there have been 8 4-person combinations in NBA history that have made the All-Star team, 4 people on the same team that went to the All-Star game. Can you tell me who the 8 combos were?
8, man, that's a lot.
8 yeah. 4-person so basically 4 players on the same team made the All-Star game.
So I'll get like the easy one, which everyone should have automatically, is the Warriors had
the Warriors.
Yeah, the Warriors had KD, Draymond, Clay, and Steph.
I mean, the Hawks
were the other.
The side. Hawks. The Hawks. The Hawks were
Horford, were the Hawks. Yeah.
Horford, Millsap, Teague, and Korver.
Yep. That's 2 of them.
I think I actually remember the Lakers had Shaq, Kobe, Eddie Jones, and Nick Van Exel 1 year. Is that right?
Wait, say it again.
Shaq, Kobe, Nick Van Exel, Eddie Jones.
Yeah, that is one.
Nice.
That was a deep dive from like one of my previous segments on this show.
Nice. There's 8.
Man, the Warriors only had 1 of those. Obviously,
Warriors only had 1 of those.
Only had 1. Yeah.
Okay.
You still have it right now. You can keep working on it throughout the show in your head or something, or figure it out for next time. But
oh, boy. Okay.
That's pretty good though. We got 2 pretty good ones there. I'm proud of us.
Yeah.
So three out of the 8 done. 5 to go. People.
What's the earliest year this goes back to?
There's some old Celtics in there.
Oh, okay.
Like old Celtics in there.
Old. Okay.
Like DJ.
I'd say older.
Well, maybe not old, old, old Celtics, but old Celtics.
Okay.
Oh, so DJ, Larry, Mikhail Parrish, or Ainge, Larry, Mikhail Parrish. Or DJ Ainge, Larry.
Okay, wait. I'm sorry, yeah, Bill Russell's the oldest combo.
Okay.
Bill Russell's the oldest combo.
Yeah. Or there is also, there's another Celtics one, but Bill Russell.
Okay, well, that's Russell, Cousy, Havlicek. And I don't know.
Havlicek is not part of the Russell Forsum combo, which is interesting to me.
Isn't Sam Jones an old Celtic?
Sam Jones, yeah.
Yep, Sam Jones is part of it. Who is the fourth one?
Oh, man.
Oh, there's no chance I'm
blanking.
A famous home announcer.
Oh, God, I just was listening to something about him the other day.
Oh, no, I mean.
TH.
Tommy Heinsohn.
Yeah, there you go. All right.
Oh, wow.
Now you're halfway there. We can move on for now.
Wow.
Halfway there.
Tommy Heinsohn is just the most Celtics name, too. That's the only reason I came to me, because I was like, Celtics Tommy.
Yeah. Billy, Jackie, Tommy. Yeah.
All right. Great. How are you, brother?
I'm good. This is funny. This is going to take us a while to like get back in the rhythm of things. It's cool. A new experience for us. I also thought when you said the core three, I thought you said the poor three, and somehow that made enough sense that I just like ran with that. It's like being what you said.
$100,000. So
yeah.
True. I mean, I'm in crippling student debt. So, I mean, yeah. I don't know.
That sucks, guys.
Yeah.
That's rough.
I know.
That's okay. 10 years down the road, y'all will be ahead of me. It's fun, right?
No, I just need Joe Biden to forgive this shit so bad. That's literally all I'm waiting for.
Yeah.
All right. But boys, look, it's really great to see y'all. It's great to be back together. So we've missed a lot of basketball, missed a lot of ball.
We really skipped Grant's how he's doing, though. We didn't get any of
that. That's all I had to say. That was my other part is I don't even know what to say anymore. I'm so out of sync with these things.
I trusted that Grant's doing fine. I mean, that's why I just moved on. But look, you know, whatever, fuck Grant. So let's move on. Let's talk about NBA basketball. The NBA finals, obviously we have an NBA champion. The Denver Nuggets, congratulations to them. Nikola Jokic is finals MVP. I think it's a little, I mean, from my perspective, it's like a little bit of validation for any naysayers who wanted to still critique Nikola Jokic, who may be on the, is he still that good? Yes, he is that good. He's incredible. Best player in the world. Absolutely insane. His run was incredible. We haven't met since the finals has concluded. So, do y'all have any thoughts about Jokic, about the Nuggets, or even about the Heat making it to the finals as an ace? Either one of you can start. Just thoughts on the NBA finals before we start to look more closer to present day events.
Great, go if you want.
Okay. I'll kick it off just gloating about Jimmy Butler because I've been right about him.
Yes, you were.
I think, and I know you tweeted about that too, Francis, so thank you. I appreciate the recognition there.
Yeah, you're welcome.
You said your name in particular?
Yeah.
In the recognition? Oh, nice.
Yeah. From this account, from our account. So he didn't want to tie his personal names to it, but no, from the Up and Under account.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's not as good.
Yeah, but I'll take where I can get it. So on the Jimmy Butler piece, this is just a side point, but just looking at I sent this to y'all, the Ringer's top 125 players after the season. I don't think Jimmy Butler can be lower than sixth right now as far as best player in the NBA. I don't think he can be lower than sixth just from what he's done. I have him ahead of Luka. I think Luka will have a better career, will be a better player, but like Luka just hasn't really done much. Didn't even make the playoffs this year. I think we just had to put Jimmy Butler ahead of Luka. So that's basically like, I think one spot ahead of Luka is basically where I have him right now. So six. Mm-hmm. So very impressed by Jimmy Butler. Don't think he was fully healthy in the finals. So I think that really affected him. And also just think he was exhausted from having to do so much for the Heat. So I understand it. And they just ran up against a much better team. That's the other thing is that the Nuggets were, this was like, I think surprised people more than it should have that they were this dominant. I think people forget that, you know, I guess it was 3 years ago now, they were basically the favorites going into the playoffs before Jamal and Murray got hurt. They were riding high and everyone was really high on them. And then Jamal Murray got hurt and they just had a series of unfortunate events for the past 2 years. And that just kind of knocked them out of it. Jokic is obviously good enough to keep them afloat, keep them in the picture a little bit, but they weren't going to contend. But people were just holding that too much against Jokic and too much against the Nuggets that they were just that unlucky these past 2 years. So came back full strength and they you know, picked it right up where they left off, and were the best team. And they're my presumed favorite. I don't care about any of the moves that people are making in the offseason right now, unless something really blows me away. None of these moves have put anyone ahead of the Nuggets as far as favorites for next year.
Yeah. I think that's a good point. Connor, you're always a big guy. Like whoever is the last NBA champion, that's usually your favorite entering next season. So is that how you feel, the same way?
Yeah. I still feel that way. Even though it seems like they'll probably lose, you know, Bruce Brown or like a piece here or there. But yeah, they're, as long as they have their main core still intact, I still have them as a favorite. And the funny thing about this whole basketball season too is that we all kept on talking about how much parity there is in the league. I think when you look back on it, it was like, actually there wasn't. There's people who didn't respect the Nuggets. Like they went 16-4 in the playoffs. Like that, they rolled through the playoffs. Yeah. We were kept on talking about how it's anyone's year. When it's like, oh, this team is pretty clear and above better than all the other teams in the NBA right now. So, which I definitely didn't realize that too. I was kind of, even though I love the Nuggets, I love Jokic, I don't think I realized how much better they were than everybody else until the playoffs. But I think the whole idea of parity this past year wasn't as strong as we thought it was.
Yeah. I think part of that too was just Jamal Murray wasn't fully healthy until like near the end of the year. And we just didn't know where that was going to end up. And it ended up exactly where it needed to be. Ended up back with playoff Jamal coming back. So with that being the case, I think, the Nuggets were just far and away the best team in the league this year.
If I could give one hope for next year, is that the finals would be the Bucks versus the Nuggets, because I would love to see a Giannis Jokic finals.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. I was really rooting for an Embiid Jokic this year. I don't think that's ever going to happen, but just one last big man battle in the finals would be pretty fun for 1 year.
Embiid is someone that the more I think about, and I have a couple of friends who are from Philly, so they are Embiid people, talk about him his whole career, that there's a good chance it's going to be pretty sad when we look back on Embiid's career. And I feel like it's coming pretty quick.
Yeah.
I feel like I don't know how much longer their window is as the Sixers, but it's hard at that weight. And if they don't figure it out as a team, how to run, like how to create a roster around him, it might get pretty sad.
Yeah.
Wow.
Which is pretty crazy to think about, considering if you had said that at the beginning of his career, we would have thought it was because of injuries. And now he's ended up actually being pretty damn healthy his whole career.
Yeah.
And still it might end up that way.
Yeah.
That is total aside, and we'll go back to Denver in a moment. But I think that's such an interesting just thought, because you saying that reminds me of Kevin Durant and how if he didn't go to Golden State and get two championships, I think we could also look back and maybe 2 years. And if he didn't win those two with Golden State, we might look back at KD's career in a different way. And I think a lot of people, even nowadays, look at KD's career in a different way because, yeah, he has two championships, but he also won them with the Golden State Warriors. So, and it's always, there's always, I don't care what anyone says, there's always going to be that asterisk to KD's titles. That's a massive asterisk. And then with Embiid, phenomenal player, obviously just won MVP, was runner-up the year before and one of the best players in the NBA, no question. But when I think that's an interesting thing to think about. When we look back in his career, like money on the table, what would you bet right now? Both of y'all. Is Embiid going to retire with a championship? Yes or no? What would you bet on?
Where he's a main guy?
Where he's the main guy? No, I don't. Okay, not even that. Because just period. Because, yeah, he could go to, maybe when he's 34 years old, go somewhere with another young core, whatever. But I still think even if that happened, there would still be an asterisk. But that would also take a lot of hoops to go through to even get to that point. So just yes or no, does he finish his career with a title?
I'll say yeah. You know, Jeff Green just got his title. Why can't he? Yeah, I just think as the point of him being the guy or one of the two guys, it might be that I hope it doesn't turn out to be this way, but it might be something we look back on. It's like, oh, that's too bad. Things just didn't shake out for him.
Yeah. He probably just has a shorter road ahead of him than we think, just considering his size, basically, and the injury history he does have. So it's probably not that much time left for him to get there. So I'm going to say no, as at least as still a main guy. Obviously, he could be a hanger-on, but yeah.
And I'm you know, big fan of the J.J. Redick's podcast, Old Man of Three, as I'm sure y'all listen to it. It's really, it's awesome.
I actually never listened to it. It's a thumbs up.
Yeah, I'm a big fan. Grant, do you listen to it?
I watch some clips here and there when I see them, but I don't religiously listen to it.
Okay, cool. I don't say I listen to every single episode, but I've listened to a lot. I like it a lot. It's a really good pod. They've talked about how much, like what's Jokic's career going to look like after this season. But I think you'd also ask the same thing about Embiid's. You know, Embiid's 29 years old. He has injury issues. I think like you all said, he's kind of bucked that idea of him being injury prone. He's actually been healthier most recently, but they're still on the quote unquote back end of their career. They probably have especially Embiid, 5 years left, 6 years left. By that point, he'll be 35, 34. You know, how many more years does he have left? So like I lean more towards Grant's answer that I think it's less likely that he wins a title than likely because of his age, because of his injuries that could take place. And the roster construction around him, it's not the best. Like, it's just not an awesome roster around him. Harden's probably going to come back. Who knows what's going to happen with him next season? But, you know, I would lean towards no as well, and more so with what Grant said. But bringing back to Denver really quick, I think a lot of people, including myself, near the end of the season, just kind of I put too much stock into their – I think they were 500 in their last 20 games, something like that. Last 25 or 24, something like that. They were just like, meh, they're a mediocre team. And I think I put way too much stock into the end of season woes, especially defensively, that they showed throughout the end of the regular season. So to a point where I'd watch them throughout the playoffs, and I think to myself, I mean, if you're going to tell me that this is how good Denver is going to look defensively, I'd be shocked, because I thought they looked phenomenal defensively, especially against Miami. The rotations, their communications, the way they move, they played with energy, they played with pop, intensity on the defensive side. I was super impressed. You know, is some of that to Jimmy Butler being hurt? Is it some of that to Miami just playing a 7-game grueling series against Boston and Denver's going into the finals off a sweep, super fresh? I'm sure that played into it as well. But I was really impressed with Denver, especially defensively, because I just didn't think they had it in, especially after their end to the regular season. So any other thoughts on Denver or the finals in general?
Yeah, I have two quick questions. One just for you, Francis. Where did you end up on Michael Porter Jr. after the series? Because you're traditionally a very big fan. Just curious on where you ended up on him.
I mean, after this series,
after the playoffs in general, but yeah.
Okay. After the playoffs, it on a scale of 1 to 10, 5 being like I left it meh. I was like a 7. I was encouraged by the playoffs of Michael Porter Jr. After the finals, that went from being like I was feeling good about MPJ, and then he couldn't throw a basketball into the ocean against the Heat. Like he couldn't make a single open three. He just was ineffective, unfortunately. But I thought more often than not in the playoffs, he showed shot making, made enough threes, but also was more reliable defensively than I think a lot of people expect from Michael Porter Jr. That kind of goes to, I think Denver's system did a really good job of switching defensively and teams trying to target MPJ. I thought MPJ held his own. So I'd say 6.5, 7 out of 10. I was encouraged by the playoffs. So that's how I feel about it.
Okay. I think he had one game, I'm trying to remember which game it was, like game 3 probably, where he wasn't shooting well the whole time in that game. He just seemed extremely discouraged and just wasn't doing anything on the court at all.
Yeah.
Clearly offense, the lack of offense, lack of shooting was getting to him. At that point I was just like super low on him. I was impressed. Like the next game, he came back, kind of bounced back, and was just doing a lot of like little stuff. Even though he still wasn't shooting well, he was going, getting offensive rebounds.
Yep.
He was hustling. He was putting effort in. So, that was impressive to see. I think I still ended up a little bit down on Michael Porter Jr. overall, just on his outlook. And I think Bruce Brown was like the better option in these playoffs overall. So not that Michael Porter Jr. is bad, but just that maybe he's not the potential star that I think some people thought he was.
Sure.
Second question though.
Wait, before you, is this going to be Michael Porter Jr. related?
No.
Okay.
You would go on him.
I just have his contract in front of me, MPJ's. He was a unrestricted free agent, the Nuggets were like, we're not bringing him back. Let's just, whoever wants him can have him. What do you think he would command for a contract right now?
A lot. I mean, still a lot.
Yeah.
So I'd say like $33 million.
A year?
Yeah.
Like a 4-year deal, $33 million a year.
Yeah. I mean, that's wow. that's just the going rate for good players right now, is that players are just getting a ton. I mean, that's about what Jordan Poole got. Desmond's about to get like 38 plus. So yeah, I'd say like 33 for Michael Porter Jr.
Oh, I was going to say 30. So I guess, I mean, it's $3 million, not a massive gap, but
I was going to say, like, you were going to say 20.
Yeah. Not a massive gap. No, I was going to say 30. I said, wow, like that's a massive jump. But I guess, like, you know, the Nets came, there was a report about Brooklyn and Cam Johnson saying they'll match up to 4 years, 100 mil, so 25 per year. And I think, I think those are similar player types, Cam Johnson and Michael Porter Jr. Pretty similar player types. And I have a higher upside of Michael Porter Jr.'s ability just to score compared to Cam Johnson's. So that's why I was going to go 30. Maybe 28 to 30 is where I'd land for MPJ.
So he's making on average 37 per year over the next 4 years.
Yeah.
$148 million to go in his contract.
Yeah. Yep. Which is too much. And that was a contract that was one they extended him, right? Like before they had to a year early too. They didn't wait and see. And they did the same thing with Jamal Murray. Yeah.
I was about to say they did the Jamal Murray thing.
Just wait and see a little bit. There's no rush.
It's probably hard though, too, when you're a smaller market to you just feel like you have to do things that other teams may not have to do.
Yeah. You want to respect your guys. And they're making a lot of smart moves right now. Sorry, go ahead, Francis.
They got the Walmart money. So, I mean, isn't it Walmart, Kroenke? Isn't that what he owns? Or am I tripping? Does he own something else?
Walmart's in Arkansas, so I don't think so.
I thought it was, maybe I'm tripping. What does Stan Kroenke own?
Let me see.
He owns the Nuggets and owns, but like, what's his, maybe I'm tripping. So, don't mind me. Don't mind me.
He owns a lot of sports teams. That's for one
thing. Yeah. He owns the Avalanche and the he owns like a minor league soccer team.
Oh, so actually it's his. Wait, how does this make sense? His wife is the daughter of Walmart co-founder James Walton. So
there it is. Okay. Maybe there's Walmart related to it.
Does he do anything? Why is he the owner of the team? I don't get this.
It's like No Country from Old Men. Have y'all seen No Country for Old Men?
Yeah, I'm not understanding the reference yet.
It's the coin flip scene. It's like the big coin flip scene. It's like a super famous scene. And he's like, you married into it. He's like, well, if that's the way you want to put it, like, you married into it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, he's at the gas station?
He's at the gas station, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
It's like a massive scale of that. Yeah, they're making a lot of smart moves though right now, money saving. I think they have their eyes set on keeping this core together, not going like into the second apron if they can. I don't know if they even had that option actually, but avoiding the second apron or going too deep into it. So they made a lot of moves for draft picks and trying to fill out the rest of the roster. They've clearly done a good job with that with players like Christian Brown. So the second question though is coming off of that, and I think similar to what we were talking about earlier with Embiid, is what do y'all think of the chances of this becoming a Nuggets dynasty and winning 3 to 4 titles over the next 6 years?
The dynasty question.
Yeah.
So pro and is in the favor is that this should be a place that people want to go play, right? That's like they are the now the team that veterans who can go get a new contract, right? And do this for a year. They're still just so dependent on Jokic that it would scare me that if even if he's out for like two or three games in a series, like two games in a series, I'd be worried about them. Whereas like the Warriors dynasty, I feel like Steph could miss a couple of games and most series are still fine. Like they could get through those earlier series. It's pretty, it's like, you know, I don't know, not too much hassle, but.
That's why they just need to bring Mason Plumlee back. And then he's just a stand-in for Jokic. And
he said, that was the main purpose of your question. Just the,
yeah, basically.
Just the blood Mason Plumlee.
But I just think that's so hard that I would say it's probably still unlikely, but I wouldn't mind seeing them win because I like the way they play basketball and I like seeing teams that I enjoy the way they play get rewarded. So what about you, Francis?
I mean, it's like the question, do you take them or the field? And like, obviously smart money is the field. So I would say no, just for smart money purposes. But I mean, again, I guess the counter argument to that is, as well as what you said, Connor, Jokic is, his game is the most longevity pro game in the NBA. There's a better way to put what I just said, but his game is going to translate. It's going to be sustainable for a very long period of time because he doesn't rely on athleticism. That's just point blank. He just doesn't rely on, he relies on basketball IQ. Yeah. And I mean, he's a massive guy, obviously, long arms, big body. He knows how to use his body. He's a strong guy, knows how to use his strength. And his game doesn't rely on being able to jump higher than the guy who's guarding him or someone on the other team. His basketball IQ is second to none. And that's something that'll always be, that's a skill that's always going to be usable and sustainable in the NBA. So, I mean, yeah, are the Nuggets, like, I don't want to say the three letters that regarding an injury, but they're one of those three letters away from the Nuggets just being useless to not being a championship contender if something were to happen to Jokic. But I think the chances of that are much smaller because of the way Jokic plays basketball. The likelihood of a major career-ending injury or career-threatening injury is much smaller to Nikola Jokic. So, I mean, I wouldn't say that I would favor them to be a dynasty, but next season, I'm with you. Denver's favorite to win the NBA title. Now, I don't care what moves happen, they should be the favorite. Like, that's who I would pick to win the NBA title. That would be my pick because they're crazy good. The roster around Jokic is perfect. It is a perfect basketball roster around Nikola Jokic. And you want to talk about team building, about Embiid, and the issues that Philly has had trying to build around Embiid. Those issues have not occurred in Denver. And, you know, is that to Jokic's game and how his pros compared to Embiid's pros, perhaps? But even then, the team building that Denver has done to build around their superstar Nikola Jokic is second to none. So that alone allows Denver to be at least the best chance for a dynasty out of any team in the NBA.
Yeah. Okay. Two really quick sub questions. How anybody take a guess at how many games?
It's like my mom on talking to me on the phone right now. Good Lord.
How many games do y'all think Jokic has missed in his 8 seasons total?
8 seasons?
8 seasons.
I feel like there was something where he got hurt one time. I don't remember now. Was there a time where he got, like, I'm going to say 8 seasons. I'm going to say he's missed. Does that include DNP rest?
Yeah, that's all missed games.
All missed games. I'll say 50.
Okay, Francis, any guess?
I'll just say 80, 10 games a year. And that's probably too high, but I'll just say he's missed 10 games each year. So 80.
Okay. It was 50 exactly. Good job,
Connor. Oh, wow. Actually?
And he hasn't really had, what's crazy about that, I don't know how you came to that math, because he hasn't really had any big misses. The most he missed was this year, missing 13. So.
How disappointed were you when I got that?
We started off strong with you been thinking there was a big injury, and then you're like 50, and I was like, damn, if only you could do math better, then you would have gotten more wrong.
That's a nice round number, like a number you like to throw around in life.
Yeah. Okay. Wow. Second question. Over under 2.5 championships for Jokic and the Nuggets.
I'll say over.
Okay.
Which then kind of like answers that they are a dynasty then.
But yeah,
that's what I'm getting to the heart of the question.
Yeah. It might be more spaced out. What I mean, I don't know. Does it how soon? I guess the Spurs are a dynasty, even though they won over a 15-year span, right?
Yeah. But that was, I think that was a rare case of a dynasty where like they just won so much over that span. I feel like it all added up to a dynasty.
Yeah.
Like if you win,
they did also win 5 times, not just 3.
Yeah. Yeah.
Man, that's so hard. My heart wants to say over because like what you said, Connor, love Jokic, love their brand of basketball. It makes me happy to see him win the championship. My head just, I don't know. That's so tough. Okay, I'll say under because I think there's too much talent in the NBA. And this hurts me to say it because I would not mind Denver to be a dynasty. I think there's too much talent in the NBA across the board, across the rosters, across the teams. I'm going to say under.
Okay. You're both wrong. It was equal. He's going to get 2.5 championships exactly. he's going to split a championship down the middle.
This is after I guess 50 exactly. He had to give us something.
Like yeah.
That's right. I know. No, he's gonna win the midseason tournament, and that'll be his half.
Like, there you go. Exactly. Be his half.
That's
the only thing. I hope people buy into the midseason tournament.
Really? Well, I hope so too. Do you think they will?
I don't foresee it necessarily. Yeah, but
yeah.
So I think that if they put incentives, I think people will. I don't know. Like, you really have to put an incentive in there.
Yeah.
But
yeah. Do we know what the incentives are yet? Is it just money? Is it? I can't remember.
I don't know off the top of my
head. Like money and whatever you ended up in the draft area, you get to move up 5 spots or something.
Wow. Hmm.
Maybe that's too much, but that'd be an interesting one.
Yeah. I think
$500,000 per player, which is nothing for the people who actually matter to
for real.
The team's winning.
That's nothing.
So
but they might want to be like, hey, so that guy's at the end of the bench, you know, I know this doesn't matter to me, but let me help you out here.
Yeah, I don't know. Some of those guys might just be like, I'd rather give you $500,000 than play hard for this midseason tournament.
Yeah, I don't know. I hope people buy in. I just don't think they will. I'm not going to get on a soapbox about why I think it's a dumb idea. I can talk about it for hours. So I'm not going to get on my soapbox. Okay, so moving on to some really, really exciting NBA trades that have happened in the past, really past week. So I'll just talk about them high level because there's a lot of moving parts, a lot of players that got moved, draft picks, et cetera. So super high level that we all are aware of. Bradley Beal is a Phoenix Sun. I don't know if that excites you, Connor. I don't know, but we'll get to your thoughts in just a moment. Chris Paul is
it's a not how I would have framed the trade, but yeah, keep going.
Yeah. Fair enough. Chris Paul is a Golden State Warrior who was initially part of the Bradley Beal trade, and now he's a Golden State Warrior. And on the flip side, Jordan Poole is now a Washington Wizard, and Kristaps Porzingis is a Boston Celtic. Marcus Smart is a Memphis Grizzly. Tyus Jones is a Washington Wizard. There are other players, tons of picks that got moved. Like I said, super high level. No need to go into the details right now. Connor, you are the biggest Washington Wizards fan that I know, I'll probably ever know, because it's such a terrible franchise. I don't know why anyone would be a fan of them. So, Connor, how do you feel, Mr. Washington Wizard, after all the movement? It's a new era. No Brad Beal. No Kristaps Porzingis. You got a bunch of team-friendly contracts. You're going to have cap space. you're now tanking officially. You're officially tanking. So how do you feel, Connor?
Sorry, just as a tangential point of the not, probably not going to meet another fan like me. We might be bottom three in the league in obtaining fans that aren't living or originating from the DMV or like from that city, that team city.
Ooh, yeah.
Even small markets have like Zion or Jaw or like something that people are gravitated to. We might be a bottom three, just picking a team randomly type thing.
I don't know. There's a lot of kids who are Johnny Davis fans out there.
The bad times I forgot that man existed. Okay, sorry, Francis. What again was the exact question you just asked?
Super broad. How are you feeling as a Wizards fan? Talk to you about your thoughts on the trades, the direction of the Wizards, if there even is a direction. What are your thoughts?
Okay. Wizards feeling, I feel a 9.
Out of 10. Okay.
And the one that people are saying like it should be lower is because the fact that we traded away some stuff that we didn't, that you would think we should have gotten more out of like 2 years ago or something. Like Beal would have gotten us so much better return than what we just got for it. And that's a correct point. But when you look at it in terms of like, this has been a sunk cost. We've already made these mistakes from previous ownership. Let's just get it going again. That's why I'm happy. So, and people were really poo-pooing the Beal trade, like the Beal return from the Suns, but 4 pick swaps, first round pick swaps, I thought was a really good return, actually.
I agree.
I kind of shat
on it until like I saw like the full return. I was like, that's actually a fair amount.
Yeah. So 24, 26, 28, and 30. 24 won't happen. The Suns will be better than the Wizards. 26, Suns are probably better than the Wizards, but that's still 3 years from now. And you don't know, like, if Durant gets older, he's just like, hey, this thing didn't work out. I want to go try something new. And then those Suns go, wait, well, we clearly don't have enough. We had to do something. It's maybe we had to, I don't know. So something happens. That's possible. Sure. Then 28 and 30 are really interesting. Then they have no assets as a team. Booker might want to get out of there by then. They could really be in a rough spot as a franchise. So it's a longer term play, but I don't hate it. And I'm pretty excited to see where it turns out to. And then part of the CP3 thing going over to the Warriors for Jordan Poole. And okay, I'm now forgetting. What did they get in addition to Jordan Poole?
They got
Patrick Baldwin Jr.
Yep.
Oh, we got Baldwin Jr.? I didn't know that.
Yeah. He was like a late addition, like 2 days later, basically.
Huh.
I just see that top 20 protected 2030 first and a 2027 second round pick to Washington. That's all I see personally.
Yeah, I think that's
okay. Good. Well, either way, Chris Paul was never going to be a Wizard. That was just never going to happen. And then Jordan Poole is the perfect player to have on your team when you're tanking, because he's either going to let you keep losing games. He's not going to win you enough. He might win you a few, but he's not going to win you enough to get you out of tanking sweepstakes. But then also, if he does turn out to play well, and the guys we like playing with him, and like this change of scenery has been a big help to him, then we just flip him too. So I think he's a perfect guy to get when you're in a tanking situation. Okay, there's also more Wizards trades going on in draft picks, but I'll leave it at that for right now. So I don't know. Where am I wrong? Where am I right so far?
I think you're all right. Congrats on getting off of Bradley Beal, who was the biggest beacon of franchise mismanagement this side of Sacramento.
Sacramento. It's just the whole country. That makes sense.
I know. So I was like, there's Sacramento, and then there's the rest of the country.
The rest of
the team.
And that's the Wizards.
Really his assets.
Yeah.
Okay. I gotcha.
Yeah, it's just crazy to me how everyone knew that was going to be a horrible contract the second he signed it, and then they just did it, and it was a horrible contract.
It's crazy how not even just the second he signed it, but before it was happening, no Wizards fan wanted him re-signed.
No, yeah. Nobody. Nobody wanted him re-signed. I don't think you did.
No. I truly don't have a friend who really follows basketball, DC basketball, that wanted him back. And it's really not even that much of an anti-Beal thing. It was just like, what's the purpose of having him here sort of thing. So,
Yeah, it's crazy. But yeah, agreed. If you take it from a sunk cost perspective, this was a really good return. I totally agreed on the Jordan Poole point. Perfect player for tanking team. Bring some excitement. And maybe, I don't know. They'll bring some local excitement to the clubs or something, probably.
The what people are saying from the area is that Jordan Poole, like, not just on the court, but will be doing numbers unseen since the John Wall years in terms of the road. Like, there's a bar in DC that John Wall would always go to, and that's nice to have a player who might be, you know, frequenting the bars again.
I saw a tweet the other day. Someone was like, "I went to this Wizards game in 2014, and I left." I went to the club and I was like, damn, how'd John Wall beat me here?
Yeah. He left in the fourth quarter, right?
Like, yeah. Crazy. I mean, you've got to be pretty thrilled. I sent you all that tweet of like the bright future Wizards. And I think that was hilarious because like, it's not good yet. Like there's some fine players on there.
That was mean spirited, but
there's fine players on there, I get it, but like it's not the bright future Wizards set. Let's calm down. There's not a lot of good young talent on this team yet. But like this was a
Thunder Rockets young core.
Yeah. No. This was a step in the right direction towards being able to build that. And they do have some young fine pieces, which once they're actually tanking and they can draft some good pieces will be helpful. So this was finally a step in the right direction for the Wizards. Agreed. A so far for the Wizards in the offseason.
And I think like both of y'all mentioned, in terms of like people who are down on the return for, you know, Brad Beal, we'll talk about Kristaps in a moment. When people have garage sales and they're taking all their stuff that no one wants, that they don't even want, they're putting it on their lawn, they're putting, the price tag is like $1, 50 cents, maybe, ooh, 10 bucks. Like, it's dirt cheap because they don't even want it. So the argument is like, why would, hopefully we would entice you to buy stuff that we don't want. And that's the same thing with Bradley Beal. Washington didn't want Bradley Beal, and everyone knew that because of the contract. So, I mean, yeah, could they have gotten more 2 years ago? Sure, but that was 2 years ago. This is probably the most, not probably, I agree with y'all. This is the most they could have gotten for Brad Beal. And they got it. So, yeah, I totally, totally echo what y'all said. There was a part of me that was really happy to see Chris Paul traded to the Wizards, because I hate Chris Paul, as y'all are probably aware of. And I was like, wow, that's hilarious that Chris Paul just got traded to the Wizards. And yeah, he's not ever going to put on a Wizards uniform and play in DC. But even the thought of Chris Paul playing for Washington just made me smile a little bit, especially coming off of a couple of days after he went on a podcast and he talked about his daughter being in school and people like checking his daughter, be like, hey, your dad's never going to win a ring and all this stuff. Well, I mean, it's kind of, I mean, it's fair. Like, he might not ever win a ring. And then he gets traded to Washington. I'm like, that's hilarious. I just thought that was peak NBA comedy to see that interview and then Chris Paul traded to the Wizards. And then again, he was never going to play for it, but I thought that was comedy.
Yeah.
Do you think you would ever make fun of an NBA player's kid or an athlete's kid if you were in the same class as them?
I mean, I wouldn't, but like kids are horrible and have so much belief in themselves. They have no idea what the world is like. They're just full bore into it.
Yeah,
I personally wouldn't. That's just not really me, but I'll laugh to myself hearing the jokes that other people who are more savage than I was as a child.
Yeah,
make those jokes. All right, so let's move on to another massive trade. Like I said, Kristaps Porzingis is a boss.
Wait, can we touch on the Suns a little bit first before?
Oh, please, go ahead.
Yeah.
Please
do. Sorry. Okay. I think this wasn't nearly the Gobert trade for them or anything. They clearly didn't give up nearly that much, and I think Beal is, I don't know, they're closer to contending, a lot closer than contending than the Timberwolves were with that Gobert trade. But this did register some seismic activity on the Gobert scale, I think, because I still don't think they are the favorites. They're definitely one of the top few favorites right now. So, but I think they kind of were that already, just having Kevin Durant and Devin Booker and DeAndre and Chris Paul. I think this scales them up in that ranking a little bit. But it also will really handcuff them financially, handcuff them building out the rest of the roster. So I think there are doubts whether this was really worth it for them in order to become maybe now like the third best favorite, second or third best favorite, definitely not first for me, but probably second or third. Was this worth it with what they're going to do, what they're going to have to put up with financially now and taking on Vito's contract? So I want to know what y'all think about that too.
I mean, only time will tell if it's worth it. My biggest concern for the Suns is their defense. And I wanted to hear what y'all thought about this point that, I mean, their best on-ball defender is a 34-year-old Kevin Durant who is injury prone. Say he gets hurt.
And off-ball.
And off-ball, exactly. And off-ball defender. So say he gets hurt for, like, you know, 20 games. What's their defensive rating going to be? 1,000? Like, who's going to play any defense on this roster? And then their bench is, like, it's one of the worst benches in the NBA. There's no depth to it. And Bradley Beal has injury issues. Yeah, Durant has injury issues. Aiden doesn't have massive injury issues, but he's gotten hurt for an extended amount of time before. Same with Booker. You know, I think it's a really frail roster, and, you know, only time will tell if, to your question, Grant, if it'll be worth it. But, I mean, gut reaction, I don't think it's worth it. I don't think it will be worth it. It's my gut reaction, because who's playing defense, and their best players are injury prone. They can get hurt for a certain amount of time, and then they have no bench. So, I don't know. I'm not super high on Phoenix. I'm really not. And my biggest thing is their defense. Connor, what do you think?
Yeah, definitely the same worries about them. I'm trying to think if I have anything else to add to that. This is not directly on this, but you do kind of wonder about the NBA, about GMs who are trading assets so far down the line when they're clearly not going to be part of that team anymore. Like, it's something seems off about that, about the way that works, that you could do that and then just go join another team and GM them, like, maybe and stuff, and that they're really mortgaging their future for this next year or two. And to your point, they mortgage it for something where they're still not the favorite. Now, it's always worth it being part of the conversation and seeing how things turn out. But yeah, I would have them below the Nuggets for sure. I assume I have them below the Bucks. We'll see what the Bucks bring back next year. I don't know. I mean, even the Lakers, I might still, depending on how the Lakers look next year, they might still be below the Lakers. Yeah, there's just teams that I definitely, like, not for sure the Suns are better than everyone but the Nuggets. It's not like that.
Yeah. Do we think they move DeAndre Ayton? Do we think DeAndre Ayton has enough value for them to move and split them up into two or three players that could help them more depth-wise?
It seems at this point that they've tried with every team and nothing's come back yet. So yeah. I would say no. Yeah. And also, does that affect DeAndre Ayton, the way he plays with them this year? Because if the thing is true that he was kind of a tougher guy to coach this past whatever couple of years or past year, and then this happens, that I don't know. This is not who you want as your fourth guy in a team that has no depth, or at least that environment aspect.
The report has come out already yesterday that the Suns are they plan to keep him. Like, it was a report of, you know, insert insider here. That's what they were saying. That I'm sure they tried, but I think, like you said, Connor, the fish aren't biting, and they're just going to have to keep him, which hurts their future prospects, and also I think hurts their current roster. Because I would prefer to trade him for supplementary pieces to add more depth, but it's not going to happen. So, yeah.
I don't know if I can trust reports anymore after this Dame situation back and forth. I'm traumatized from this. It's just every day it's a completely opposite report. So
yeah, probably every day changes on whether they think they're going to get something back or not.
Yeah,
but yeah. I don't know. Who knows? Like, it's point being, I'm not sold on Phoenix. Part of this trade reminded me of, you know, trading for Paul George, getting Kawhi Leonard, and the sentiment that I've heard, you know, shout out Zach Logan, hi Zach, that I've heard on his podcast a ton when they talk about the Clippers is you have to make that Paul George trade. You have to do it. You know, at least puts you in the conversation and makes them a genuine bona fide favorite. You have to do that trade. Well, in this context, I don't think you had to do it. You know, I don't think you had to trade for Bradley Beal. You just made a seismic trade to get Kevin Durant. And you still have Chris Paul. Yeah, he's in his waning years, but you still have him, Devin Booker, and you had some depth. And maybe with a new coach, you could get Aiden to buy in. But now, like y'all have said, you're basically putting every single chip in the middle for this next season. And if it doesn't work out, who the hell knows? Who knows? Yeah, theoretically, you still have some people under contract. You still have Brad Beal under 3 more years left, KD for 2 more years, and Booker for 4. But who knows what's going to happen to Kevin Durant after next season? What is his level of play going to be like? I don't know. And they have no money. They have no cap space. They have no flexibility. They're in that second apron of the CBA, which basically hamstrings teams' ability to build genuine championship-contending rosters to fill in the rest of its spots. So I don't know. I don't think this was a trade Phoenix had to make. Any other thoughts on the Suns?
What if you reframe the trade as the Suns knew that what they had right now wasn't good enough, and they not really as an anti CP3 thing, but they didn't think CP3 could hold up. He's gotten older and it's not working right now. That they knew no matter what, they were getting rid of CP3 this offseason. And so if that's what they're doing, then could they have done anything better than a Beal trade? Like, was there anything, even if it's a couple of pieces instead of one bigger piece, or there's another player, like, would there have been anything they could have traded CP3 that contract for that would have got them the same as Beal?
I think they could have, they couldn't have gotten someone as good as Beal, basically. But again, I think this goes back to like whether Beal was worth it, was whether Beal was taking on this extra money, because the other option really was just getting off of CP3's money. Because I think they could have done that. And maybe gotten just, you know, a similar package to what the Wizards got for CP3, something like that. But taking on less long-term money than Jordan Poole got, just taking on short-term money. I think that that's just the debate is whether it's worth it to take on Beal, whether he really puts you above and beyond, or whether it's better just to get off that money, be able to build the depth around the players you have now, maybe go try to attack free agency next offseason. And do something there. So,
yeah, I mean, I totally echo what Grant said. I think the latter, you don't make this Beal trade. You let CP's contract run out. And I think, you know, reports made it clear that Phoenix was going to let go of Chris Paul at the end of this year in some way, shape, or form. And, you know, Connor, I'm sure what you just said is exactly what was it? Matt Ishbia, isn't that the owner of the Suns? Matt Ishbia.
Yeah.
Who's the GM? I don't know. Is it James Jones?
James Jones.
It's James Jones. Yeah.
I'm sure what Connor you just said is what they tell themselves when they go to sleep. I'm sure that's it. I'm sure that's the only way they justify it in their minds, because that's the only positive way to look at it. If you're a Suns fan, if you're Suns brass, if you're Suns ownership, that's it. Because otherwise, The negatives are clearly there. I mean, we know them. We just talked about it. So if we know them, they know them, and they just have to ignore them. They just have to say, screw it. You know, we gotta sleep in the bed we made, and this is the bed they've made, and we'll see what happens. You know, is it going to be worth it? Who knows? Like I said before, my gut says no.
Yeah. The other thing I didn't mention, and we can stop with this, I just want to mention, was that Chris Paul's contract also was only guaranteed $15 million this year. So they could have just been wiped their hands clean of it this year and just been done without even making a trade if they wanted to do that. So,
yeah, I fully agree. All right. So let's move on to that Kristaps Porzingis trade. He is a Boston Celtic, and Boston got, I'll actually mention the draft picks and the other players as a part of this one, because I think it's important to talk about it in the broad picture of this whole trade. So Boston got Kristaps Porzingis, the number 25 pick in the 2023 draft from the Grizzlies that they traded for like multiple second round picks. I don't really remember all the picks they traded that for, but they like continuously moved down to the draft and got second round picks. And then a 2024 first round pick from the Golden State Warriors that Memphis owned, which is top four protected, but it's basically Boston's. Grizzlies received Marcus Smart. The Washington Wizards got Tyus Jones, Danilo Gallinari, Mike Muscala, and the number 35th pick in the 2023 draft. This was a big one. Blockbuster trade for Grant and I, our Memphis Grizzlies, and for Connor, you're a Wizards fan, but you're also a Celtics fan.
Yeah,
so I'm sure this was in your mind, this was a weird one to digest. So
what a douche, by the way.
So I'll start with you, bro. You know, thoughts from a Boston. Oh, I'll let you take it. Boston first or Washington, however you want to start with it. Go ahead.
Okay, I'll start from the Boston side, because I just talked about the Wizards for a while. That the Boston's front court is just like, while I like it a lot, I really like Horford, I really like Robert Williams. That's not what you want to go into a season relying on those two guys at Horford's age and Williams's history. So, and Kristaps adds another, Kristaps kind of combines a couple of things that those two guys offer. He offers some of the shooting that Horford can do. Like, I don't want Kristaps doing off the dribble sort of threes, but I think if he's open for three, I think he'll knock them down. So the role that Horford had, and then it'll offer some of the rim protection of just blocking shots that Robert Williams had. So it says that I think he's a little bit of element of both those guys' games, which is nice. They can complement each other when one of them's out. And it definitely makes them more potent on offense. So that's a really nice addition for them. I just, from a pure basketball standpoint, that's a huge get for them for this next year. The part that I was just like, I was though, just like the overall feeling for this though, was just kind of a bit of sadness that Marcus Smart was gone.
Yeah.
And I know that for people who are not Celtics fans, that Marcus Smart is not always the most liked guy in the NBA. And I even am someone who hates flopping as much as anyone, but because I loved Marcus so much, I kind of just let it slide for him because of what he does outside of flopping. And just, what, I don't know. He was just such a great teammate and a great guy to have on the team. And I just loved, like, of my five favorite memories of the Celtics ever since he's been a part of them, he's probably like three or four of them, where it's just like him diving for a loose ball or doing something, making a big play in a time where just like no one else was willing to put in that effort that he just did. So it is sad to see him go. I'm curious to see what you all think of him, having him as a Grizzly, because I am forgetting what your thoughts on Marcus Smart is, but I feel like Grant might be a non-Marcus guy, if I remember this correctly. So I'm curious to hear that. So sadness that Marcus is gone, but from a pure basketball standpoint, it makes sense because the Celtics already did have a lot of guards, and who knows, maybe Marcus comes back in a year or something. I'd love to.
How do you feel? Let's stick on Boston, because there's obviously a lot of dynamics to this.
Oh, and also, I can't believe we got picks out of this. I have no idea how we got picks or the Celtics got picked. It doesn't make any sense to me. But we got Kristaps and picks.
Like I said, let's stick on Boston because, again, a lot of moving pieces of this trade. We'll obviously talk about Memphis and even touch on Tyus Jones and going to the Wizards. But for Boston, question for you, Connor, because my biggest hesitancy for calling this a win, like a bona fide win for Boston, is we still don't know what's going to happen with Malcolm Brogdon and his injury issues. I think Derek White is more of a shooting guard than a point guard, though he can play point guard. And are you going to play Kristaps with Robert Williams? Are you going to play him with Al Horford? How does that fit work? Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum, obviously we know they're not the greatest passers in the world. There's a tendency for the ball to stick.
I want to put Tatum in a separate convo, though. Tatum is, while still not the greatest passer in the world, let's put him in a separate classification. Think on this?
Sure. Okay. Fair enough. Yeah. He's not a black hole like Jaylen Brown could be. So I'll give you that. But, you know, Kristaps is another guy. Is he going to be comfortable doing this, you know, corner threes, catch and shoot threes, or is he going to demand the ball in the block like he did when he was in Dallas? And in Washington, he had a great year last year, but he was the best player by far. And he got the whole offense got to be ran through Kristaps. That's not going to happen in Boston. So how sold are you on the fit of KP on the Celtics?
I'm sold on the fit. I mean, okay. It'll come down. We'll see how injuries kind of play out, because all three of those guys are front court people or people you're nervous about. But no, I'm
definitely
sold on the fit. I think he fits in really nicely. And I think so I didn't personally get to watch much Wizards games last year, but from my friends who did, it seemed like, I mean, he's not giving you 30 every night or anything like that, but he just seemed, I don't know, he doesn't like demand too much, but he also can do a lot of things for you, which I feel like is exactly the role that Celtics are going to want him for. They're going to want him, like, if he wins you a couple of playoff games, great, but if he's just a guy who's helping out in other games, then that's all they need.
Okay, Grant, I'll ask you the same question. How do you feel about the fit?
I feel pretty good overall. I mean, yeah, he was really good last year and is theoretically a pretty easy guy to fit just as a shooter and rim protector. I think, yeah, there is a little bit of like overlap with him kind of being his best when the offense can be run through him. But, you know, that's something they do a lot of already, kind of. They run the ball offense through their bigs, through Horford and Robert Williams. They rely on that a lot. And he, I think, has developed some as a passer over the past few years to where he can kind of be that hub to a degree. To a certain degree, he'll just be kind of filling in those same gaps, those same roles that they've had with those big guys, while providing some stuff that they can do. I think it's just going to come down to value. This is just going to come down to like the next contract and what they can get that for. Because right now with $36 million, that's too much. That if they're resigning him with that, I think that's going to be too much, and this won't be a good value at that point.
With Jalen Brown,
it's like Supermax, you know, fairly similar with Jalen Brown Supermax, exactly, and it's fairly similar to the Brad Beal move, where it's kind of going to force them to get rid of some of their depth. They're gonna have to, you know, probably let go of Grant Williams, probably have to get rid of Malcolm Brogdon down the line and like move Peyton Pritchard up into that backup point guard role. The difference there is that they did have like the deepest team in the league, so they do have guys kind of ready to step in, and they won't really be spread as thin as the Suns will be. So they'll have some of that to make up for, but I think it's going to depend a lot on the next contract. It was the fact that this is a 1 year is good for them, because like right now it's too big of a contract for what they have coming. So if they can get that him at some sort of discount and get the sort of player that the Wizards had last year, while being able to figure out a way to fit him pretty well, then this will be a really good move for them.
Yeah.
If
I can frame a Kristaps question to you, it'd be, and I think this kind of dictates if this is a good trade or not for the Celtics, or how good of a trade this is KP's season last year a result of him being the guy on a team, or is it more a result of him having more time recovering from injury and he finally just like he's back? And whichever where you are in that that line, I think, kind of dictates it. But where are you on that?
I think you hit the nail on the head. That is going to be the determining factor of how good is this fit going to be for Boston. Because obviously, if it is that, he had his own team, he could have the ball and do whatever he wanted, then that's gonna spell problems for Boston, because that's just not what this roster is going to be with Tatum, with Jaylen Brown. That's not how it's going to be. But if it is the former, or I'm forgetting which one you said first, but if it is the one where he's healthy and he's back. And I've also heard that I listened to Hoop Collective podcast a couple of days ago, and they talked about how Kristaps was genuinely, he grew up a little bit after being traded from Dallas to Washington, saying like, wow, like I thought I was that good, but you're just willing to trade me like that for that return. Okay, maybe I need to get better. Maybe I need to get healthy and really improve as a not just basketball player, but as a human, as just a person. So, you know, if those are really the case, then awesome. You know, I'm definitely not rooting for KP and the Boston to fail. I don't do that for teams unless you're Chris Paul. I'm always going to root against Chris Paul. But otherwise, I'm rooting for this to work. I really am. I just don't know. And I'm leaning towards, personally, I lean towards that this was last year, it was his team, and they weren't playing for anything. Washington wasn't playing for anything. So there wasn't pressure. Brad Beal was hurt. Like this was KP's team, and he could dominate. He could put up 28 points. However, I don't remember his stat line off the top of my head, but I know it was a great stat line. And he's just going to have to adapt in Boston because it's a totally different situation. So
yeah, and it's super hard for a white guy to adapt to Boston.
You said it, not me.
He is a foreign white guy. He's not Luke Cornett. There we go.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Go ahead, Grant. I do have another question, but go ahead, please.
I think like Kristaps' career, you bring up a really good point, Connor. Kristaps' career is kind of like a microcosm of what I was talking about with Denver earlier, where they've had this two gap years and people kind of accepted that as the reality when the reality was like the actually healthy Denver is a dominant team, right? I think when we've seen Kristaps healthy, he's been really good. He was really good early in his career. He seems like he was really putting it together. I remember like at the FIBA World Games or was the Olympics. I can't remember one summer. I was like, damn, he looks really good. He seems like he's about to go off, and he got injured like right after that. The last time we saw him healthy before last year was like 2021 playoffs with the Mavericks, and him and Luka were humming. And he looks really good in that. So like when we've seen him healthy and that's the real Kristaps, like he's been really good. But I think people have accepted like the lesser version of Kristaps when he hasn't had that time to recover and he hasn't been fully healthy. Sure. As like what the real Kristaps is. So yeah, help is obviously a huge factor always when you're talking about him, but I think I have some faith that he can maintain this current stretch of health, and like that like last year wasn't a fluke, it was just him being healthy.
Yeah, okay. I think both Connor, Grant, both of y'all are saying very fair things, and I appreciate the perspective for sure. So I'll ask this other question I have regarding Boston, then we can move on. Basketball wise, Grant, Connor, y'all are sold. I'm not fully sold, but y'all are, and obviously I fully respect y'all's opinion 100%. Culture wise, how do y'all feel about this culturally for the Boston Celtics? Because this to me signals trading Marcus Smart, who Connor, as you mentioned, Boston fans adore. He set the tone. He did the dirty work. He represent that blue collar aspect that Boston fans love about their athletes. Like, you know, that they crave that in their stars. He's gone. That tone setter, that he's just not there anymore. And you replaced him with Kristaps Porzingis, who, let's be real, as good as he is as a basketball player, that's not his reputation. It's not the type of guy he is. So this signals to me, Boston looking at Jason Tatum, really, I'd say Tatum or the Brown, quite frankly, this is your team now. You set the tone. You and Jaylen Brown, really, but really you, Jason, you're the superstar. You set the tone for this team, and this is on your shoulders now. How are you worried about that? Are you worried about the culture of this team? How, because I don't know. I don't want to put words in your mouth. How do y'all feel about the culture-wise of the Boston Celtics?
So you may not put words in our mouth, but I felt like if we were in a courtroom, that would have been a leading question.
It's probably argumentative.
Yeah, whatever the terminology for it is. This isn't a thing against Kristaps. I don't think he's going to hurt or help the team dynamic. I think, like you're saying, he'll be there. And
I don't think they brought him as a culture setter. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly.
I mean, I agree exactly what you're getting at there, Francis. And I think in particular, it's now going to be, okay, Tatum, we've given you really some really solid teams here this past couple of years. Yeah. And now like, okay, it wasn't enough. We made a change, but you are clearly now the voice of this team, or this is yours. And there's not, and not just voice, you're the one who's going to have the ball. It's not Marcus would be the guy who makes a lot of important just with the ball decisions late in games. And that's probably now going to go to let Tatum have most of those. And if it doesn't work out, it will be a thing of, well, it wasn't us. It's like, we gave you this. So
yeah.
Yeah.
Well, how does it make you feel? Cause I agree, but how do you feel as a Celtics fan?
I'm just sad that Marcus is gone, but and I still don't trust. I mean, there's no one on the cell. There's no one who would be such a dominant ball handler. Like, I mean, I try like someone like Al Horford is somebody I trust to make the correct basketball play a lot of the time. But for people who will be dominating the ball, it still isn't like, oh yeah, I really trust what they're doing in the last 5 minutes of a playoff game. That hasn't changed. So, and if anything, I think it's worse now. I actually thought that he has a couple of ones that make you go crazy, but for the most part, I thought Marcus still, I don't know, did the right thing. So sure. I don't feel great if that's the
okay.
I think the big effect culturally is that they cannot bring Grant Williams back now because there's going to be no one to tell him to shut the fuck up.
It's so funny how much everybody talks about how much he talks.
Yeah.
Yeah, for real. Yeah. Grant, do you have
feel like people feel about him like they felt about Dwight Howard in the locker room. I feel like it's the exact same vibe.
Without MVP.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
No, I don't have any big insights into the Celtics culture. I would basically just be repeating what a lot of people have said, which is that they felt like things hadn't worked. It was time to like move on and hand it over to Tatum and Brown and give them more of a voice, like y'all said. So, yeah.
Okay, fair enough. I was curious that's I'm not sold on the fit, and I'm not sold on what this roster, the continuity, the culture, the team chemistry, what that's going to look like moving forward. So I'm a little more sour on the trade than you all from a Boston perspective. Go ahead, sorry.
Just to help also move this along, I'll give 30 seconds on the Wizards, and then let's get into the meat of the Grizzlies, because I really want to hear what you guys have about the Grizzlies on this.
Go for it.
Okay, so I love Tyus Jones as a basketball player.
Yeah.
And so it's going to be fun to let him be a point guard, starting point guard. I don't expect us to keep him. I think he'll play like half the season and then he'll be gone. Ooh. And I just hope wherever he goes, he's happy, because I love watching him play basketball. So that is my thing of the Wizards. Either way, it's I'm moving on for them for now. Let me hear your Grizzlies talk. Yeah, what's the thermometer?
I will say on that, I'm very interested to see just a full season of Tyus Jones, because we've talked about it on the pod, how Tyus is just much better as a starter than he is as a backup. And like some of that might have to do with like player fits and lineups. But I'm just going to be watching with a lot of interest to see how he does full season, full-time starter.
Yeah. And I'm guessing for you too, like you both just want the best for him, right? I'm guessing you're fans.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I just want Tyus to be happy. I want to get his bag. I want to get a solid contract once this one's up, because he deserves to be paid money.
He might be a top 10 NBA player in terms of universal. I hope things work out for this guy this year.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, Francis, you want to go first? You want me to go first?
I've shared my thoughts a lot, especially on the Twitterverse. So I'll let you go ahead, Grant. Go, please. I'm very curious. I haven't talked to you about this.
I'll hit on what you said, Connor, about me like not being a Marcus Smart fan, or you thinking me not a Marcus Smart fan. I think you're in the ballpark. I don't think Marcus Smart is bad. I'm not really like anti his antics, even. I don't really think that. I think just the discourse around him has really gotten carried away the past few years, where people talk about him like he's a top 40 player and he just isn't. I don't think he should have been defensive player of the year 2 years ago. I don't think he was the best, maybe not even the second best defender on the Celtics. I think he was just the loudest defender on the best defensive team in basketball.
And the plays he makes you notice.
Right, exactly. That's what I mean by loudest, yeah.
Oh, okay. You've been loud, but you've been actually like antics-wise.
Both antics, both his personality and the plays he makes. So I think he's good. I think he's the type of player that basically every team would love to have. I do also think he's one of the most overrated players in the league, because he's just not quite as valuable as people think. And he was definitely a little diminished this past year. He's been through a lot physically. He's put himself through a lot physically. He's coming up on 30. So this might be a bad time to invest in Marcus Smart. That being said, I do think the Grizzlies are a better team for this trade. I think he is better than Tyus Jones, as much as I like Tyus Jones. He's at least better than the version of Tyus Jones we were getting as the backup point guard. Maybe Tyus Jones is a starter, could be better than Marcus Smart. We'll see. Again, I'll be watching that with interest. But the version of Tyus Jones we were getting mostly as a backup, the way we had to use him, Marcus Smart was a better player than him for sure. He kind of fills some gaps that we have, I guess. He can be the backup point guard that Tyus Jones was. He is still a very good defender, fills in that Dylan role to some degree, is not, despite the percentages being pretty similar, is not really as bad a shooter as Dylan, especially in the playoffs. He's been pretty good over the past few years. He seems to really hit him when they matter, which Dylan is the complete opposite. So so that's progress. And he's a very good playmaker. That's the other thing that Dylan was missing, is when people left him open and he had to go drive, he had nothing he could do except for pull up for a shitty mid-range jumper. Marcus Smart's a very good playmaker. So like, he'll be able to attack closeouts or non-closeouts, whatever, and he'll be able to make the right play. So that's all the positives.
And a bit of a post.
And a bit of post game too. The other thing, this is, I guess, going to be both negative and positive.
You're segueing into your negatives.
Yes. He has long arms. He's got 6'9 wingspan. He is a long history of guarding up and doing a good job, doing a solid job. I still think people fucking underestimate size in the NBA. And I don't know how that's possible, because it's basketball and like there's a 10-foot rim and like you need taller players. The Grizzlies already felt small, even with Dylan, because of how small our backcourt is. Ja is small. Desmond is small. Desmond's not 6'5". I don't give a shit what anyone says. Desmond's not 6'5", and he has a negative wingspan. It's negative wingspan. We have a small, even with Dylan, who was not the biggest wing, but like 6'6", 6'7", and stocky. We still felt small. Still felt like there was a lot of areas for, and with Jaren behind him, we didn't have Steven in the playoffs last year, so there was less of that size, at least. But still, like, there's just a lot of matchup hunting that can be done there. Marcus Smart can take on those bigger matchups. You're still giving up a lot of height. You're still getting a lot of size. It's still like you're being like, oh, Marcus Smart can play up and like do a serviceable job. It's not just like having the big wing who is like built for these matchups, right? It's not the same thing. And just like having that size out there, having having that lack of size is just a disadvantage on the boards. Disadvantage in passing lanes and just like what people see driving lanes. There's just a lot of disadvantages, and people just don't really understand how important that is, and that we cannot really be starting in the playoffs. So we can do it in the regular season. In the playoffs, in the playoffs, we cannot be starting Ja, Desmond, and Smart, and Finn closing games with Ja, Desmond, and Smart as our three. That's just not going to be a championship team. It's not going to be.
Because that's why you put – if you put Smart on a bigger guy, then okay. But then let's say you put Smart on the other team's best guard. Who the heck is jaw guarding? I'm like,
right.
Yes, if he has to size up. Yeah.
Right. And it's super frustrating, because the only conclusion at this point is that Rudy Gay pulled a Voldemort and put a curse on the position when he left Memphis, because it is unbelievable. It's unbelievable. Our inability to just go out and get a small forward who is actually what we need. Like, we have not had a single one since Rudy Gay, whether you want to, let's not go into Rudy Gay discourse, but
smart.
We just have not seen a single one. I mean, I've talked about the past couple drafts. We could have gotten, I'm blanking on my guy's name. Not Zaire Williams, but the other guy we could have gotten to go on the Pelicans. I'm just completely blanking on his name.
Oh, Trey Murphy.
Trey Murphy. Could have gotten Trey Murphy. Last year's draft, we almost had a Lakers pick that could have been Jalen Williams, who I think we would, if we had that pick, I think we would have taken Jalen Williams. He is just the perfect guy that we would have loved. We got Zaire. Hasn't turned out so far. We'll see. Roddy and Laravia, I like, I'm high on. I don't know if they're going to be the guy for that. I just don't know if they're going to be the guy. So it's just unbelievable that we haven't been able to just go get that true small forward. And while Marcus Smart does fill some of those needs and can, like, I guess in the short term and in certain situations, be that guy. He does not check all the boxes at all. And I don't think with him as our closing three, or Desmond's our closing three, whatever you want to say, that's a championship team. So giving up, so the fact that we gave up assets, the other thing is that it's just clearly every single person who saw this trade was like, that's one too many picks. Like, everyone knew it. That's just one too many picks. Why?
Were the Celtics saying no if they got one pick?
They had just come off of the deal falling apart, and we jumped in to basically save it for them. And we were like, yeah, they're like two picks. I'm like, yeah, let's just do it. Let's just go and do it. We were the ones that were desperate. The deal had just fallen apart for them.
Yeah. There's a ticket. There's very little time for any deal to happen.
Right. Exactly. Very little time. So gave up those assets that could have been, again, this is now becoming a little bit of a pattern. Kleiman, as good as he is at talent identification and going after the right guys, identifying the right guys to go get in trades, to go and draft, especially on the margins, marginal guys, not like top tier talent guys, not obvious guys, the diamonds in the rough. He's great at identifying that. What he has proven to me over and over again, he is not really capable of going into negotiations with another GM and coming out not only with neutral value, but even, or not even, but not positive value, but not even neutral value. He's the one that seems to be getting taken to the woodshed on these deals and bleeding a little value and over again. And that has just been piling up for the past few years to now where we had a bunch of assets that we could have compiled and gone and got OG or Mikal Bridges or whatever name it was. We just bled a lot of those assets. We just don't have that many anymore. We have some young guys. We still have, we now control all our future picks. But that Warriors pick there was upside to that. They're one Steph 30 game injury or whatever away from falling apart and that being a lottery pick. So that was like one of our most valuable assets. And it was just, he just threw that in the deal. Clearly wasn't necessary. So losing faith in Kleiman as a trade negotiator. And think that there have to still be moves. I don't know what they're going to be now, but there have to still be moves for this roster to be complete. I don't think Marcus Smart checks all these boxes and like just completes the roster for us. So that's my rant. What do you think, Francis?
Wow. That was a lot, Grant. I appreciate it.
Yeah. I've been building that up.
I'm sure. It sounded like it. For
people who can't see it, his face changed when he started and it's coming back to normal color now that he's done. You could tell that this has been weighing on him.
Yeah.
That was a lot, but that was good. So let me try and talk about the multiple points that you brought up. So I'll start with the pick aspect, because I've heard this discourse a lot that, yeah, they gave up two first round picks. For me, trading two first round picks for Marcus Smart, knowing where they were at 25, and then obviously the 2024 Warriors first, they just got Chris Paul. Are they going to be better or worse? I don't know. We haven't talked about his fit in Golden State yet. But I don't know. I do think at the very least he provides some insurance if Steph were to get hurt. And, you know, CP is also injury prone as well. Point being, they're still a really good team. The Warriors are still the Warriors. So I don't think that 2024 pick was worth all that much. It probably would have been mid-20s pick, kind of around 25. Speaking of 25, if you would have told me that the Grizzlies were going to package picks to trade up in the lottery to get a guy they really liked, I think I would have preferred that than trading for Marcus Smart. My gut, I think I would have preferred packaging and getting a guy they like in the top 15, top 10. I would have preferred that.
I will say, like, so this, that was another piece, is this hurt more watching Cam Whitmore slip. And I don't know if that's the guy we would have gotten. But like, if he was available, I think we could have traded with the Heat at 18, moved up from 25 to 18, and gotten Cam Whitmore. And it's like, oh shit, well, we just ended up with this talent. So this hurt a lot more watching that.
I agree. So I think that also that surprised me a little bit that they chose to get Marcus Smart instead of package picks and move up in the draft. So that was a surprise. But that's what happened. We deal with it, whatever. But at the same time, I don't think pick 25 was worth that much. The Warriors pick, I don't think, was worth that much. And based on reports, again, Kleiman and Memphis, they really loved Marcus Smart. They wanted his veteran presence, the culture setting tone that he provides to rosters. They wanted that in Memphis desperately bad. And look, even as a Grizzlies fan, I could acknowledge this team has a lot of issues of being too young, inexperienced, and all that stuff. And people have been clamoring to provide veteran presence to basically just be the adult on this roster besides the Steven Adams, because you need more vets. You need vets. You need people who have been there to set the tone. And Marcus Smart checks that box 1,000%, along with being a Dylan Brooks replacement. The other question was, who's going to be the perimeter defender with Dylan Brooks not coming back to Memphis? Marcus Smart checks that box. And yes, I understand the size. He's not very tall. He's not as tall as Dylan Brooks. But I still think, just as a peer out defender, I mean, Tony Allen was 6'4". He wasn't that tall either. And he played with heart. He played with tenacity. And he bothered the best scorers in the history of the NBA, unlike other defenders who have played the game of basketball. You can say a similar thing about Marcus Smart. So I'm not too worried about his ability to, at the very least, defend up. I think that issue was fixed by trading for Marcus Smart, in my mind. The lineup that you mentioned, Grant, the closing lineup of Ja, Smart, Dez, Jaren, and Steven Adams would be the full five. And I wanted to mention the full five because I think the last two guys of that five are very important. Jaren Jackson Jr., he won Defensive Player of the Year. He's the best defender, according to the award, in the NBA. He is a shot-blocking array. He's a shot-blocking machine, switch and guard 1 through 5. And Steven Adams, when he's healthy, is another very good interior defender. You have Ja Morant as a defender, question mark. Desmond Bane, I think his defensive abilities are overblown. He's like an average to above average defender for Desmond Bane. But then you have Marcus Smart, also won Defensive Player of the Year 2 years ago, whether or not
Desmond Bane is a good defender. This isn't me hating, I just generally didn't know.
He's above average. He's not great, not gonna make any defensive all defensive teams, but he's above average.
And that's what I said. He's average to above average as a defender. That's what he is. I want to say he's good. He's average to above average. So I still think there's enough defense, especially having Triple J and Steven Adams to anchor things down low, that you're still going to have a plus defense, a top five defense in the NBA because of Triple J, Marcus Smart, Steven Adams, Bane, who's, again, an above average defender. The only negative is Ja. And so at the end of the day, I still think that's a very good defensive roster. But I think your point, though, about still needing to get a small forward and not getting that is totally fair. Because, you know, I believe that Memphis tried to get OG. And what this trade signals to me is Toronto was asking for too much and Memphis wasn't willing to commit all that for OG. That's what it signals to me. There's no reports about it. I have no idea what they offered, if they offered anything for OG. But that's what this trade tells me, is that, hey, we weren't going to sell the farm and get OG Anunoby. We're not going to do it. We wanted Mikal Bridges. You know, reports came out for how many picks to offer for Mikal. But Brooklyn, you know, they weren't letting Mikal Bridges go for anything. So that was off the table. So they looked at OG, is my guess, and they said, nah, we'll rather just make this trade for Marcus Smart, who is still an all-world defender, who sets a culture, who provides another leader in the locker room that this team desperately needs. And they've got their guy. They got the guy who they really believe in to be a difference maker for the team. And I think what I'm closing my mini rant on, I guess, is that point. He is everything Memphis as a team culturally needs. And there's no other guy in the NBA that Memphis could have traded for who could provide that same thing. There's nobody. You know, say they traded for OG. This is still a young team. And OG, he can have issues where he wants a bigger role. He wants to do more than just be a 3-and-D type guy. And who knows what he would have done for Memphis' chemistry. But we know what Marcus Smart is going to do for this locker room, for Ja Morant, for Dez, for Jaren, for the rookies, for David Roddy, who other Grizzlies fans are much higher on Roddy than I am. But I think Smart's another good guy to put Roddy under his wing. So I agree, Memphis still needs a three. And I think I still think their moves aren't over. They still have the mid-level exception. We'll see what they do. Sign and trades are very possible. We'll see what they do. I don't think they're done, but I think this is, I think it's a really good trade for Memphis. Memphis is going to love Marcus Smart. It's basically a Tony Allen successor. It's the same thing. Oklahoma State, Boston, Memphis. It's literally the same thing.
Tony Allen went to Oklahoma State.
Yes, he did. Yep. Yes, he did. Wow. So it's the same thing. And I'm a fan of the trade, fan of the trade.
So you guys already answered what my follow-up questions were going to be. The first one, the big one I thought, which I was going to ask was, you guys rightfully loved Kleiman because he was doing a great job. The rebuild was really quick in Memphis. Yeah, he was on a hot streak with draft picks. But over like the last year or two, like I was wondering if you've now tempered your hopes, but you've kind of answered that. But like it seems to be like it seems like he's starting to show a little bit of flaws, or at least so far, but it might change. He hasn't been great in trades yet. And I actually personally don't think that your last like draft and a half or draft or two have been great. But
no, that's true.
So, but once again, that's still. But you can kind of answer that anyway. The other part was I want to ask this. Not sure this is the one that I'm not sure we got answered, or if he's mentioned. But because you mentioned it for the city of Memphis, but for you two in particular, and especially Grant, January 2024, February 2024. Will you be texting like, oh, I love Marcus Smart, and you're going to throw out this thing that you kind of know that the media on him is overrated or underrated, whatever, like whatever they're talking about him is wrong, but you're like, I don't, there's something about this guy and I'm in. Do you think you'll be that way for both of you, but I think also particularly Grant?
I'll let you answer first, Francis. Let me think about it.
I'm higher on this than Grant is. So my answer is yeah. I mean, I like the trade. I'm higher on this than my very lovely friend Grant Hefinger is on the trade. So yeah, 100%.
I'm gonna say no. Connor, you brought this up when I was super excited about, this is so funny, but I was super excited about Zaire Williams offseason last year. that was the first time I was like unreasonably irrationally optimistic about a player like that. So I don't think I'm that type of guy who's going to get carried away with head over ears love for Marcus Smart necessarily, especially that quickly.
Especially when he burned.
Yeah. So no, I'm going to say no. I'd also like to counter some of Francis' points. First of all, on the picks and the value thing, two picks and Tyus Jones, that's three first round picks.
Because Tyus is for sure giving the Wizards a first, right?
Tyus would give you a first. The Wizard, I think, yeah, Tyus would give you a first. Even if it's protected first, he'd give you a first. And those are valuable. Again, like that's three picks. Like you're talking like OG's value. I would have wanted to overpay. Like at this point, I just want to overpay for one of those guys. The guy who actually checks all those boxes. That's three potential first round picks or whatever, Tyus and two picks plus other stuff that we could have used in that trade that's now gone. Right. So it again, just like I for a guy like Marcus Smart, for a guy like OG or a guy like Mikhail or a guy like that actually checks those boxes, I'm like overpay, just give the picks, whatever we need to fill that spot. Guy like Marcus Smart, I'm not just like, let's throw in these picks just to get our guy. Especially again, like what we talked about, the deal had just fallen apart. Celtics probably are pretty desperate. Why do we need to do this? Tyus Jones and this year's pick would have been okay with it. Would have been like, okay, good trade. Like that's, I would have been good. The Warriors pick was just unnecessary. Didn't love that. What else did you talk about? Can you run through your whole thing again? I'm trying to remember.
Yeah, I'll just start over. I mentioned that your issues with the small.
Oh, yes, small.
Smart as
small. Yes,
I think Steve and Jaren help those issues.
They do. I agree. They do help. That's a big back line. I still think it's just too many matchup hunting available. The Tony Allen point. Tony Allen 20 is a good point, but Tony Allen was playing the two for us. He was playing with Tayshaun Prince and Jeff Green. Matt Barnes, he's sure playing with those fill in role player threes who were good defenders and could not be hunted like that. So it's just a collection of small guys. It's not just that Marcus Smart is small. Like, I get that he can play, but it's just a collection of these small guys, these three small guys who can be match punt. And I think even more, maybe more importantly, the defensive end. I mentioned the rebounding as part of it too. You just have a disadvantage on the boards at that point. Obviously, Steven Adams helps you a lot with that. Jaren doesn't help you as much as like a guy his size normally would, really. I've been back and forth on whether that's really fair to him, but whatever. But also on the offensive end, just having a lack of guys who can get their shot off has absolutely hurt us in the playoffs. It's not super easy for Desmond to get his shot off. As good as he is, as good as a shooter as he is, he comes off screens and he can't pull them like Klay Thompson because he's not 6'7". He has to like shot fake and go. He has to take, just the shots he has to take are tougher. It's late shot clock situations have been pretty hard for us. And half court situations have been pretty hard for us because we don't have that sizable shot creator that can just go get a pretty good look basically no matter what. Jaren's development has helped a little bit with that, but like he's never going to be a full-blown shot creator like that. So this just adds to that. On top of Marcus Smart, I don't know if y'all saw the B-ball index tweet that had, they had a full breakdown of Marcus Smart in like five tweets. One of them was his offensive grades, and they were all like very bad. His like points per possession, all these kinds of shots are so bad. Like he was like D's, C's, and F's across the board. So not good there. And then yeah, just the lack of sizable shot creation will hunt us if that is our closing lineup. I promise to God, sure. It will hunt us on top of the defensive stuff.
No, I think look, your points are valid. I'm not even I especially the offensive one, that's a super, super valid point. And I fully agree. Memphis still needs a three. They still need a three. Everyone in the NBA knows that. Hopefully they do a sign and trade. Hopefully they get someone in the mid-level exception. Who knows? Who knows? I don't think Memphis is done. Yeah, I think the next couple of weeks we'll get a notification on our phone saying Memphis signed so-and-so, traded, sign and trade for so-and-so. I think it'll happen. So I don't think they're done. I think I'm just more so really excited about culturally what this means for the team, what this means for the youth of this roster. And I also think this signals that Kleiman has a lot of faith in Ziaire Williams still, because who knows if he doesn't improve, could he be that three? Who the hell knows? My gut says no, but hopefully it's yes. David Roddy, again, people, Memphis fans love David Roddy. Not a big Roddy guy. I know, Grant, you're not a big Roddy guy either, but who knows? Maybe he develops. They talked up Jake LaRavia a bunch too. Maybe he, who knows? But I think I'm just taking a more positive view on getting Marcus Smart, a guy who culturally 100,000% fits the roster. No question. You know, the cultural fits, the issues there with getting an OG, I think those are valid. And then from your perspective, Grant, you would have overpaid to get OG. And I would have too. I would have also overpaid to get OG and Anobi. But Simon wasn't willing to do it. The front office, they weren't willing to do. And this is it. I mean, this is just the reality we have. And at the very least, we got somebody who fully fits the roster, who can defend multiple positions, who is a better than Dylan Brooks offensively, which isn't saying much, but he's still better. It's not saying a lot. And like you said, playmaking. Y'all mentioned this playmaking before. That's a huge thing too. We were begging Dylan to pass the ball and playmake for other people. Smart averaged 6 assists a game last year. He can playmake. So I think the pros, from my perspective, the pros outweigh the cons. But the cons you bring up, Grant, 100% valid. Totally valid.
Yeah. I think we're a better team. Like I said, I think we're a better team. I just think it was too much to give up for a guy that does not check all those boxes, like I said.
Yeah. Yep. Totally, totally fair. Totally fair. Okay. So let's look. We've been doing this for a while. We've been talking for a minute. Do you want to do the NBA draft thing super quick? Because I got three players. I got two players, Grant. I know. Do you have three? We can share them super fast. Touch on the draft.
Yeah, I guess we can run through that really quick. I probably have like two players too. We can just be super quick about it.
Yeah. So I'll start. So my talking about the NBA draft fits player fits on the team that we really like. I was really excited to see Derek Lively go to Dallas. that's my number one like hole that made me, I genuinely reacted positively. Like I said, whoa, that's awesome. That's a great pick for Dallas. Because I've been clamoring for them to get a rim running shot or rim running shot blocking big for a year and a half. I told them when we did the pod during the trade deadline, I thought they should have traded for Jakob Poeltl, because I thought he would fit perfectly next to Luka and sort of fill in the holes that Dallas has defensively. Lively, again, he's super young. He's super unpolished. He still has a ways to develop, but the tools are there. And I think he would be a good, I think his fit on Dallas is really positive. So, Grant, what about you?
As a guy who watched a lot of Duke games this past year, the first thing the Mavs need to do is fix his foul problem.
Yeah.
It was unbelievable last year. That was the thing. Every person in the stadium go, oh, of course, like we're 6 minutes in, he's got two fouls already. How did this even happen? So here's how they fix that.
Yeah, fully agree. Fully agree.
Yeah, I think player type wise, he fits very well with the Mavs needed. I don't think timeline wise he fits with the Mavs needed, because they need to be good now. Fair. And I would have liked them to get a more like Jakob Poeltl to do something like that, to get a more developed player version of this. I would have liked to see that. I don't know if they could have done that in the draft, but. I did like the way they maneuvered this draft. I thought it was super clever to move back two spots and get off Davis Bertans' contract. Like normally that takes a full pick to get that, not just moving back two spots. So I thought that was really impressive. And then to use that cap space to take on less money with Rashawn Holmes, who's actually like a usable player for them, and to get the 24th pick in addition. So I thought they maneuvered through the draft really well. But my first fit that I like really well, and this one maybe just is a guy that I really like and probably would have liked him anywhere, but Chris Murray on Portland. I just like Chris Murray a lot. I think he's very similar to his brother Keegan, and will be able to contribute right away, so I think kind of can fit perfectly between those two timelines that Portland is balancing between right now. Can help them immediately if they keep Dame, or can help more in the future, and to be just a perfect like role player around the talent they have if they move off of Dame. So super excited about Chris Murray. Still can't believe that Iowa had Chris and Keegan on the roster and just could have had two of those guys, but we're playing Chris like 15 minutes a game because they were like, he's not ready. And then as soon as they play him the next year, he's like one of the best players in the country. I'm just like, you could have had two of these guys. Like, why aren't you playing him?
Yeah.
Wait, so if Garza came back for another year, would they have had a lineup of Garza and the possibly the Murray brothers as the wings?
If Garza had come back for another year, yeah. Wow. That would have been a championship team, yeah.
Oh, wow. Dang.
All on the roster. Yeah, okay. Who you got next?
My second one is, it's like, it's easy. It's bait. It's easy. Just Cam Whitmore in Houston. And the fact he fell to 20. I mean, come on. What just happened? I've been meaning to look into like why it actually happened, and I just haven't. So maybe Grant, Connor, you all may have better insight. But that's nuts. And he's a wing. He's a long, versatile three that fits really well with Houston's other talent on the roster. They needed a three. They obviously got Jabari Smith, but I think Cam could play with Jabari Smith. It's a great fit. Timeline-wise, player-wise, fun, like athleticism-wise, Houston's going to be one of the most fun 2K teams next season, without a doubt. Like, just high-flying, rim-running. Oh, it's going to, yeah, that'll be a fun league pass team. It'll probably make a lot of Houston Rockets fans want to punch themselves in the face sometimes, but it also, it's got to excite them as well to see this young, athletic, energetic roster.
Yeah, it just like fits perfectly now. Like all the pieces kind of fall into place for them. I'm not sure if like actually skill set wise it's gonna fit. Like if there's enough shooting, I'm blanking on a lot of names right now. Who's their centers? It's their center, the foreign Sengun. Sengun, yes. I'm not sure if he's gonna be their like long term starting center. If they're gonna have enough like rim protection and size with him in there. So like it is, I'm not sure the skill sets fit, but like position wise, they got like everything. They got like seven guys locked in basically perfectly for what they need right now. So it is an exciting young team. As for why he fell, there's medical reports. There's also a lot of like bad interview reports, and I'm just gonna repeat a joke here because y'all haven't heard it, and no one else is listening to this has heard it either. I was listening to Pod earlier, and Ryan Russillo was like, yeah, the interviews were bad, but like, unless he said I actually designed the sub, then I don't know what he could have said. It would have made teams pass on it in the teens. So yeah, I thought that was really funny.
That's good. Go ahead.
Some of those like why not the Lakers or something?
Yeah. Like Jalen, I don't think Jalen and Chivino like makes more sense for them than Cam. Yeah, I don't know why either. Once you get to that point, it's just a lot of teams who haven't done research on the guy, don't know really why he's falling, or doing like last minute medicals, and then at the last second are not going to like stray off their path, take that risk when they have already like chosen their guy that they're going to take.
Yeah, there must be something wrong. Let's not be the one who looks like an idiot here.
Yeah, exactly. Which Houston obviously was the perfect team for, because they had done research on him at 4, knew all this, and like had that second pick and could just like take the flyer. It doesn't matter. Let me see. Second one I like. I'll go Julian Strother for Denver, just because he's the perfect Michael Porter Jr. replacement. For when they decide that they want to move on.
I sense a little shade.
Yeah,
I sense a little. Just a smidge.
I like Julian Strother a lot. He's a super active guy. He's always reminded me of just a smaller Jason Tatum, and that sounds like ridiculous, but like just the way he plays is kind of like a smaller, like kind of more like energetic Jason Tatum to a degree, but he's just got like a smooth game. It might just be because he's light-skinned, to be honest with you. Wow. Like if I'm being real, that's how most of these comparisons go.
Realize we're ending this pod with a moment that Grant needs to do some reflection.
Yeah, for real.
All right, re-examine my personal biases.
And on that note, that'll be the end of the show.
But just a nice wing, very experienced, a winner, has a nice skill set, and I think will be like fit really well and as a cutter and an off-ball player with Jokic. So like that fit a lot.
Cool. I don't have a third. So Connor, do you have anything you want to say about the draft? Or Grant, if you want to give a third.
I'll end this as this pod should be ended, on the Wizards. That once again, I'm happy with their pick, because I don't know anything about the guy except the fact that he seems to be all potential and it didn't work out. But who cares? You're the Wizards and take the shot.
This is definitely the most exciting Wizards pick in a long
time. Yeah.
So good.
Yeah, that's totally fair. Okay, so. Oh, John Collins got traded, but like whatever. Who cares? He got traded to the
Jazz. What the Jazz? The Jazz now. I mean, I guess they think Laurie's a 3, and John's a 4, and they drafted Taylor Hendricks, who some people think is a 3, but I think is or could be a 3. I think he's going to be a 4.
They could play a jumbo lineup.
Yeah, they can. They have Walker Kessler.
I don't get it.
They got a lot. They got a lot of force.
I don't care much to even talk about it.
Yeah,
I agree. I mean, whatever. John Collins is on the Jazz. Cool.
Yeah.
Cool. Right. That's the end of that segment.
Listeners, tune in next time to fear the answer for the eight combos trivia question.
Yeah.
How many we got? We got 4.
We got four of them so far. Yeah. Okay. And you can try on your own. Or if you could text me throughout the day, I'll let you know if it's yes or no.
I'm gonna think.
Yeah. I think as well. All right. Cool. Well, fellas, it was awesome to talk to y'all again. It's been way too long. It's just straight up been way too long. So happy to see both of you, wonderful faces. And to everybody listening, thank y'all for tuning into the pod. Don't forget to give us 5 stars, subscribe to the podcast, follow us on Twitter at the Up and Under. And until next time, peace.
Cool days, hot tops, with my blue face. Ice pops, I'ma make a shoelace, necklace. Yeah, we whipping pops on Lexus. And I'm skipping school days, mic drops. Eyes on summer like Cyclops. Yeah, we falling off the sidewalk. Mama, want your homeboy.